We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft. But Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Welcome to Bear in Mind, the official podcast of Cal Athletics. Here's your host, Todd McKim.
Hi, everybody. Todd McKim, and welcome to another edition of Bear in Mind, the official podcast of Cal Athletics. As we wind down the basketball season, we get started in baseball. So those are the focus points for us today, as we'll hear from Lindsey Gottlieb as her team heads to the Pac-12 tournament in Las Vegas. And also baseball, huge weekend coming up on the road against LSU. LSU, number one in the country last week. Then they lost three straight to Texas. But the Bears know that they're going to a tough place to play, and ought to be a great series for the Bears. We'll talk to head coach Mike New, but we start with Y. King Jones in men's basketball, concluding the regular season with the annual trip over to Maples Pavilion to face the Stanford Cardinal. Coach, thanks for being with us, and congratulations. A couple of really good wins last week against the Washington schools. And first of all, beating Washington and handing them only their second conference loss of the season. Just kind of gutted it out, I thought, in that basketball game. And then to come back against Washington State, I thought, showed some maturity, because and everybody wanted to celebrate the win against Washington, and maybe sometimes you don't get ready for the next game. But I thought handled Washington State pretty handily in that one. So just your thoughts about the weekend and getting those two wins.
Well, you know, obviously to start and get a win against the top team in our conference, top 25 team nationally, was great for us. It was a great way to end the streak. You know, in that game, you know, I keep telling my guys, you know, the best thing that we did throughout that 40-minute game was we got the last five stops on defense. And, you know, that shows growth. That shows maturity. That shows hard work. That shows focus. Shows a lot of different things that we've kind of drifted in and out of this season. And so I was really happy to see that more than anything else, you know, to be able to get five stops against a veteran team to seal a win was wonderful. You know, and then you look at the fact that we had 22 assists on 30 made field goals. You know, my challenge to our guys before the game was, you know, hunt plays, not shots. And, you know, I throughout the season, typically you see, you know, when things start to break down or when we struggle, it's because we're individually hunting shots. Mm-hmm. And, you know, for our guys to come out and hunt plays and get assists from hunting plays, from making the right decision was something that we've been waiting for you know, all season to have a game like this where we're doing it for 40 minutes. We've had games where we've done it for 30 minutes. We've had games where we've done it for 35 minutes. And it just a 5-minute span of not playing necessarily together has hurt us. And so I was really, really proud of our guys to come out with the game, to execute the game plan to perfection. You know, we shoot 55% in that game to a team that gives up, you know, 40s. We shoot 53% from three to a team that gives up 30s from three. And so, you know, just playing as a team, you know, Darius had 19 in the game, Connor 18, career high. It seems like every time we go out, Connor gets a new career high, which shows how well he's been playing as of late. And Justice, a very solid 14 points, 8 rebounds, 6 assists, 3 steals, 2 blocks, you know, on 6 of 7 shooting, 2 for 2 from 3. It's just a testament to the guys playing together, trusting each other, believing in each other, after going through the streak and continuing to scratch, claw, and fight, continue to believe, continue to trust, and continue to share, you know, has been great.
You know, you also rebounded Washington in that game, too. The first time in a conference game, the Bears had more rebounds, and they're pretty good on the boards. Then you beat Washington State. In fact, in both of those games, Y-King, you know, certainly with Washington State, you got Ellaby and Daniels. They end up going 13 of 35. A lot of those are contested shots, so the defense was good on those two guys. Even in the Washington game, it was only the two guys, Noel and Crisp, who had a big night. So, you know, you look at it, I'm sure, in that if one or two guys have big nights, but the other guys aren't scoring, we got a good chance to win. Whereas your team in both games had the balanced scoring. So I said on the air, it was like, it's tough for two guys to beat five guys. And that proved to be the case this past weekend.
Yeah. And then just the psyche of, you know, okay, one or two guys have it going offensively, but the other guys don't, you know, just the psyche of that. We've been in that situation mm-hmm. a ton of times where Justice is having a great game. Darius may be having a great game. Matt may be having a great game. But everybody's not involved. And so I think it takes its toll on the other end, on the defensive end, because if you're not getting the ball, if you're not getting your touches, if you're not seeing the ball go through the rim, I don't think guys have the same kind of energy coming back to play defense if they're not necessarily involved on the offensive end. And you know, and so I think it's just human nature. And so, you know, yeah, Chris has a career high 32 points. Jalen Noel gets 22, which is kind of what he kind of does. But Matisse Thybulle having 4, Hamir Wright 0, Dickerson only getting 8. You know, it took its toll on them. And I think they had some lapses in defense as a result, byproduct of guys not getting the kind of offensive touches that they probably would want. And so I preach to our guys all the time, hey, who cares about scoring? Like, let's say we don't, as long as we see the ball go through the rim in our favor, it doesn't matter who it came from. It doesn't matter who, you know, we're better when the games that we've won, we're better when we have balanced scoring and you're not, defenses are not able to just key in on one or two guys. And so, balance scoring is always something that you want. And so going into the Washington State game, you know, you wonder, are the guys going to take their foot off the pedal because we got a big win? Are they going to be focused? Are they going to be dialed in the way that they were on Thursday night? And they did come out. They came out and we were dialed in, you know, and we go into the locker room up 11 and feeling good about, you know, what we're out there doing. And so, I felt like at the end we kind of lost some focus, especially at the free throw line, missed a couple layups, but we were able to pull it out and, you know, feel good about Thursday.
Thursday being this week against the Stanford Cardinal, first time around, the Bears lost 84-81, a game in which, for those of you that might remember, it looked like the Bears were probably going to take the lead with 13 seconds left. Matt Bradley drives baseline, runs into Josh Sharman, makes the basket, whistle blows. They say that it's a blocking foul. It looks like Matt's going to go to the free throw line to give the Bears the lead. Instead, they overturn the call. Stanford gets the ball now up 2. They make a free throw. The Bears can't make a 3-pointer to tie, and Stanford survives that ball game. But when you look at this game, Stanford's played pretty well now, last 3 or 4 weeks. I'm going to ask you, do they have the deepest roster in the league, Wyking? You go through the league and all right, you got starters and maybe one or two guys off the bench. They seem to be able to play up to 10 guys if they have everybody healthy. They might be the deepest team, and they're one of the longest teams in the league, I think, is maybe their number one characteristic.
Well, what makes they have depth. They can use up to, like you said, 9 or 10 guys. What makes them good is that they have length. They're not the biggest team. UCLA is the biggest team, but they're the biggest team with versatility. So, you know, when you got Da Silva, Akpala, you know, Josh Sharma's playing great basketball. He's finally starting to be the guy that I'm sure they wanted him to be when they brought him in there and they recruited him. You know, they're versatile, you know. They're able to move guys around and play different positions, and they have length, but at the same time they could step out and shoot a little bit. So, you know, but the primary thing that they want to do is they want to score in the paint. They're one of the teams that they don't rely heavily on the three as some of the other teams in our league. They really want to get the ball in the paint, whether it's off post touches or drives. And so you got to do a great job of keeping them in front and limiting their paint touches. We did not do a great job of that in game one. Akpala ended up with 30 points against us in game one, and it was all from, I think he made 1-3. It was all from him getting into the paint and finishing over our guys. And so we got to do a better job of keeping, if we're in a zone, we got to do a better job of keeping it tight and almost daring them to shoot it, playing the odds. Or if we're in the man, like I tell our guys all the time, we got to square these guys up and make them come through your body. Can't get blown by. You can't give up angles. You got to make them come through you, you know, to get to the rim. If they're going to get to the rim, they got to come through your body. And so those are the two things between those two defenses. Those are the things that are going to be most important for us to get a win.
All right, the final regular season game, then it's on to the conference tournament. Not sure if we're going to have the opportunity to talk to you before the tournament, just based on your travel plans, et cetera. But it ought to be a terrific tournament because it seems like, I don't know, 70% of the league has like 8 losses or 7 losses. So, I mean, it's really going to be tough to handicap the conference tournament. But do you have, as you look at the end of the year here with like awards, do you have a guy that you think is the favorite to maybe be the player of the year? It's a tough year to pick a player of the year as well, because there hasn't been anybody that's really stood head and shoulders above anybody else. Who might your candidates be?
Well, I mean, you got to look at, if you're talking about player of the year, you got to look at the best team, which is Washington. And you got to say, okay, well, who's the most dangerous guy on that team? And to me, it's two candidates. You look at Jalen Noel, he's the go-to guy. If they need a bucket, they'll clear out 1-4 flat, and they'll just say, go get a bucket. You know, he's that talented. He's that good. He's that poised. He's only a sophomore, but he plays like he's a senior. And so he sticks out as the most dangerous offensive guy on their team. But then when you look at what Matisse Thybulle's doing on the defensive end, as well as offensive end, you kind of say, well, you know, maybe he's the guy, because what he's doing is so rare. I saw a stat before we played them that said in the last 7 games he's averaging 5 steals and 2.5 blocks in the zone. And so, you're like, well, how does that even happen? How do you get 5 steals out of a zone? But he's fun to watch. He's a coach's dream, because, you know, most guys don't dedicate themselves to defense like that. And so I think it could go either way. It almost like it should be a co-MVP between those two guys. I don't think there's anybody on any of the other teams that stand out that really give those guys much competition.
Yeah, I would agree with you too. And because they won, they're going to win the league by, you know, 3 or 4 games too. They've been the dominant team in the league. All right, as we wrap it up, from the beginning of the year to now, what have you seen as the area or areas in which your team has shown the biggest improvement?
Well, learning how to play together. You know, that in the beginning of the season, my gripe and challenge was, hey, we gotta start assisting each other. We're not assisting each other. You know, we're playing a lot of one-on-one basketball. The ball, we got too many guys that are ball stoppers out there and talented, but you know, you can't do it on your own, you know? And so I just like the fact that from day one till now, you know, I feel very comfortable with us going out and executing the game plan and knowing that we're going to share the basketball. That's something that we have definitely improved leaps and bounds with. Really excited about the growth of Connor Vanover this season, from where he started, where he was just kind of a guy that could come in and hit a three, you know, and now you see him finishing with dunks and hitting 15 footers, hitting mid range shots, clutch threes, end of games, just doing so much more on the defensive end than he was able to do in the beginning, moving better, running the floor better, blocking shots, disturbing shots, changing shots. Really happy to see his development, you know, and then just, you know, a couple brights. I think Juwan's playing when he's not in foul trouble, when he's not out there fouling. I think he's playing good defense. Darius is starting to get a groove and starting to understand that he can do more than just shoot the basketball. You know, I'm quick, I'm athletic. You know, he's thin, so he can slice in there and attack the rim and finish at the rim. And so he's starting to play good basketball and starting to kind of diversify his game a little bit. And so I'm just happy with, you know, just the overall the fact that our guys could go through a losing streak as long as we did, and they continue to fight, they continue to come to practice every day ready to learn, they continue to come to practice every day with the right attitude, staff staying together, staying connected, staying hopeful, staying positive. I'm happy for all those things, and you know, just really want to go get a win on Thursday and continue playing good basketball.
Well, I don't know that you have anybody, maybe one person on your team that has walked out of Maples Pavilion not winning. When you talk about how young your team is, and you got Paris Austin as a transfer, maybe Roman Davis is the only one. So no bad memories over there for the Bears. Hopefully we make a few positive ones again on Thursday night. Coach, we appreciate it, and good luck.
Thank you so much, Todd.
Joining me now on Bear in Mind, the official podcast of Cal Athletics, women's basketball coach Lindsey Gottlieb. The Bears at the Pac-12 tournament this week in Las Vegas. I think it was like 7 years in Seattle. And I'll go to Las Vegas. That'll be a lot of fun for the fans. And that'll be a terrific tournament because the league is absolutely outstanding this year with some of the top teams in the country. And the Bears trying to win a championship as they head over to Las Vegas. So, Lindsey, first of all, before we talk about all that stuff, we got to talk about earlier in the week. And I thought this was a terrific idea. I don't know who instituted it, but there was an in-staff free throw shooting contest. There were three different levels of competition. I assume one was kind of novice and maybe intermediary and then skilled. And you won the skilled competition, right? Is that how we're describing that particular level? Congratulations.
I believe it was called advanced. But yes, the email.
We'll call it highly skilled.
Highly skilled, yep. So I echo your statements that it was one of the best things that the department has ever done. We got an email from compliance, but Jim Knowlton was out there. There were academic advisors involved, the Learfield folks, coaches, support staffs, a lot of people in Haas. And I'm telling you, Todd, the trophy's going right next to the Final Four hardware. It's going right next to the Pac-12 championship thing because that was one of my finer moments in Haas Pavilion, taking the title in front of all my colleagues. I'm not going to lie.
I was thinking as I walked down the halls today, they stripped all the pictures that were out there with the scholar athletes. I was thinking maybe it'd be like a giant video screen and a montage of the free throw shooting.
You know, I wouldn't be opposed to that. I've gotten some different people stopping me today who, you know, maybe you interact with or not on a general basis, high-fiving me, saying great job, calling me champ. I could get used to it. You know, there were some tough competitors along the way. I had to knock off some various people from various departments. I knew 8s and 9s out of 10 weren't going to cut it. I had to go, yeah, you know, more 9s and 10s. But it was really nice to face Ed Wright, our team's academic advisor in the final, former Cal student athlete, and you know, he had his Warriors gear on. He was great competition, but I was able to pull through in the end.
The key. What's the key there to winning something like that?
I think just being able to handle the pressure, focus and concentration, you know, everyone has the ability to make free throws, right? It's kind of an equal, doesn't take strength or power. And I think it was the mental fortitude. I was thinking about my players and the tough free throws they've had to make, and had a couple of them in the gym there watching and some following on the Instagram story. But just tried to lock in and focus the best I could. And, you know, it was, like I said, hopefully the first of many trophies that we're going to get in March, but definitely a significant one in the Gottlieb Martin household.
Well, and forever and going forward, you'll be the first to have won the competition. So it's always great to be first. No question about it. You'll be the defending champ next year. And that's where the pressure really starts to mount, because now you've got people got a year to kind of shoot for you.
You're up. True. Yeah, and Todd, you make a good point. I need to make sure I keep my skills up over the year, not let the wind go to my head. Make sure that I'm keeping my nose to the grindstone and getting in some extra free throws whenever I can.
So as a coach, your philosophy will be with your team, you know, do what I say and what I do. Sometimes it's do what I say, I can't do it. So you have set the bar for your teams going forward. No question about it. Congratulations and well-deserved. All right, let's talk about the pack. Well, first of all, let's go back to last weekend. You've won four in a row now after you went through the gauntlet of the Oregon State, the Oregon Stanford. And now you've come back against the Washington schools. And before that, you went down south and won some games as well. So you're on a roll right now, and that's good to have going into tournament play when it is one and done. You survive in advance kind of deal. And the first time out, you're going to face a team that you just got done playing, Washington State. Pac-12 team also announced. Christine, no surprise, she made it for the fourth consecutive year, only the 15th player in the history of this conference to achieve that. And she was named the Defensive Player of the Year. She's one of the Defensive Player of the Year candidates nationally as well. Can you describe the kind of weekend she had up there in the state of Washington, where she had a 30-30 game that hasn't been done in women's college basketball since 2002?
Yeah, I mean, you've covered a lot there. I can't begin to describe, you know, the weekend that she had. I would first say that our ability to win four games in a row coming off a tough stretch, I'd certainly credit to the leadership on this team. It's not easy to lose games, especially close games and meaningful games. You know, this is a team with championship aspirations. So all of a sudden, when you have to turn the table a little bit and say, hey, we need to win four in a row to guarantee our place in the NCAA tournament, or to, you know, fight for a spot in the league that wasn't our original intent, that can be tough. And our leaders really buckled down, kept the ship going in the right spot. And now I think we are playing how we know we're capable of, which is having one of the best players in the country, but also not being a one trick pony and making sure that our offense is clicking, you know, with the multiple people. And we've had great performances. I mean, Rosé was the Pac-12 Player of the Week coming off the Arizona weeks, and Forbes was the Freshman of the Week. And we've been able to defend a little bit better. So we're in a good spot. And then what Christine did in Washington was so remarkable, mainly because it didn't seem that out of the ordinary. Mm. This wasn't a 32-30 game that came out of nowhere. This is a game that felt like Christine going to work on a Sunday afternoon like she has all season. The number's a little bit better, yes. But we're talking about a kid who's averaged 24-18 in conference play with some of the best defenses and best defensive-minded coaches in the league who are all game planning to stop her. So it's been incredible to be a part of, you know, to watch her growth and maturity, to watch her dominate as she has. She's deserving, obviously, of, you know, the award she's gotten and probably more. But our team is locked in on heading to Vegas with an opportunity to win a championship and also for, you know, a deep postseason run.
You know, again, she's going to be the all-time leading Cal player in points and rebounds. And I mean, she just continues to add to that. And she just is. I was really impressed when I think it was this morning I looked at it, at SanFranciscoChronicle.com. You wrote an article that kind of puts it into more than just basketball terms. Because really, at the end of the day, it is more than just basketball. We talk about wins, losses, points, rebounds, et cetera. I thought that was a very touching, heartfelt article that you wrote about her. And it exposes you and her to more than just the everyday fan as well. And I thought that was special of the Chronicle to publish it, first of all, but for you to write something like that.
Well, thanks. You know, what it was is that every senior day, you know, I always believe you should honor the seniors with more than just, you know, starting someone who doesn't normally start or just announcing their stats. I believe that it's deserving of a moment after the game to really talk about each one of them, because as student athletes in college, it's a different deal. You know, you're part of their lives. We're asking parents to trust us. So I spend some time, you know, making a speech about each of the seniors. Well, obviously, you know, Christine's newsworthy. And so the Chronicle asked if they could publish that speech. And so I thought that was really neat because I do think, you know, we talk about her being, you know, the greatest player to have worn the jersey here, but that's not really the story for me. You know, it's really an unbelievable reward to watch her kind of do all these things nationally and get ESPN National Player of the Week and hopefully be, you know, an All-American. But more so, it's been, you know, one of the most rewarding things of my career to see a young woman develop and come in with great numbers, but decide she wants to be better than just that. And just stick with this program through hard times and lead us to better times. I mean, it's been a really neat thing. And I am appreciative that they care more about the story than just her eye-popping numbers. But wow, the season she's put together is just second to none.
Yeah, it is second to none. Hopefully we'll get some All-American honors as well for her and maybe Defensive Player of the Year in the country as she won here in the Pac-12 Conference. Mackenzie Forbes also named the honorable mention All-Freshman team as well. She's really come on strong late, shot the ball really well. And so that's good to see. All right, you go to Vegas. You've got Washington State in the first round. If you're able to defeat them for the third time this season, you would advance against the number two seed. That'd be Stanford. So, and you guys split. And then the winner of that game would advance to play somebody from the other side of the bracket, maybe the number three team, which may be Oregon State. But you've got Oregon, you've got Stanford, you got Oregon State. And I think in the most recent poll, they're all within the top 12. They've taken turns beating each other. But you've played those teams pretty well this year, too. When you're splitting with Stanford, Oregon State games could have gone either way. Oregon, you've played them well in the past. So, I mean, this is a tournament that is really up for grabs in some regards.
I think so. You know, we have to beat Washington State on Thursday night. I mean, obviously, it sounds like coach speak, but we really do. I mean, that's what, and to play them, I think back to back here might actually help us because it's a quick prep. I think we can do some things better than what we did. I mean, we were successful up there. You know, and then they run a similar offense to Stanford. You know, they both run Princeton. Stanford does it better than almost anyone in the country. So I think we have to raise our level, but I think we're able to talk about Stanford a little bit without talking about Stanford, you know, in prepping for Washington State. You know, and then you hope you give yourself an opportunity to get deep into the tournament and you take your shot at whoever. Because when I say whoever, it could be, you know, you're talking multiple teams that have spent time in the top 25. So Utah's on that side of the bracket. You know, they could get hot. UCLA and ASU have an early matchup against each other should ASU advance. So anyone could get hot. And so we want to be the team that is at a level, you know, we feel like we've been playing for our lives the last, you know, four or five games. So if we can keep that same type of mentality going, the tournament is wide open. Women's basketball has been incredibly exciting this year across the board. But, you know, the Pac-12 conference in particular, I think a lot of people across the country are looking forward to seeing what happens.
Yeah, it hasn't just been one team dominating women's college basketball this year. There have been several teams that have been number one during the course of the season. I think that adds to the excitement. How about Las Vegas? I mean, it's been in Seattle. Seattle was a great venue up there, a key arena, because the city of Seattle has always been, for 30, 35 years, a hotbed for women's basketball. Your thoughts about going to Las Vegas and changing the venue?
I'm excited. You know, so Seattle has been a wonderful host. The key arena is under renovation, so there was no choice. I think Vegas could be really fun, you know, for a lot of reasons. You know, there's a shark aquarium in our hotel. I know my son Jordan's looking forward to that. We'll hopefully get him there. But I do think you potentially open up, you know, a new set of fans to a basketball tournament. I think you get our fans excited about a new venue. You know, anything with women's basketball that's a first year of doing stuff can be tough early on because women's basketball is about building connection. So I expect that it will be better in year two and year three in terms of a fan base. But one thing that's neat, you know, Seattle is a pro women's basketball hotbed. Mm-hmm. Las Vegas just got the Aces. I think there's been a lot of money put into marketing and excitement around the Aces. I hope we can capitalize on that and get some local fans and local media in addition to the fan bases of the 12 schools traveling. So I'm really looking forward to it. There's always some, you know, bumps with new logistics. We'll play in the MGM Garden Arena this year and then the Mandalay Bay Arena where the Aces play next year. But mostly, I think, you know, when you're playing good basketball and people are there to see it, you know, can make our own memories there.
Well, as they say, what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas unless you get a chance to bring home another trophy and put it over there with your free throw shooting. And then we'll bring that trophy home. Good luck. You're on a roll. That's always good coming into the tournament. And two weeks from now, I guess we find out about the NCAA. So get the troops ready to go and good luck in Las Vegas.
Thanks so much, Todd.
All right. When we come back, we'll talk a little baseball as the men's baseball team heads to LSU, probably one of the more difficult venues in the country to play at. But the Bears are going to be ready. They're 6-4, and they have the best player in college baseball. Andrew Vaughn. When we come back, we'll talk to the head coach, Mike New, as we continue. Welcome back to Bear in Mind, the official podcast of Cal Athletics. The blooms are on the trees. It feels like springtime, even though we're about halfway through winter, but it's time for baseball. The boys of summer will be playing here in a week or so, and spring training for the Major League Baseball teams. But for the Cal Bears, they get into it right away, as this weekend they head down to San Diego to face Cincinnati a couple of times in San Diego as well. And joining us now is first-year head coach Mike New. Not the first time he's been at Cal, but it is his first year as the head coach. First of all, congratulations. Welcome back after a two-year hiatus over at the UOP. But just your thoughts about, you know, being in the number one chair and making the decisions and all of that good stuff.
Yeah, no, thanks for having me. It's great to be back. I mean, obviously, know a lot of these guys, recruited a lot of these guys, coached all the seniors. So a little different transition than my first time, you know, leaving to become a head coach. A lot easier this time around and, you know, knowing the conference a little bit and understanding Cal and then the guys. So it's been well, you know, taken, I think, by these guys and really, really an easy transition for me. So happy to be here and excited to coach these guys this year.
Well, exciting the fact the weather, Mother Nature, has been pretty cooperative since you came back from the break there, the holiday break. How has that changed, improved your preparation for the start of the season?
Yeah, it's been huge. You know, typically this time of year, you're putting the tarp on and off the field and trying to figure out who is going to be prepared to pitch because you got to do some stuff indoors or maybe in the cages. And that has not been the case. We haven't missed a beat with anything. So there's really no excuses for us. I mean, we've had every single day of preparation. You know, all the guys have pitched, you know, the amount that we've wanted them to pitch. Our guys have got plenty of at-bats. So I hope it helps us. You know, I'm sure every team in California, it seems like, has kind of been in the same boat. But, you know, we are probably a little ahead of schedule, you know, not having to dodge some of these bullets in the you know, beginning part of January into February. So it's been great for us.
Yeah, it's been an unusual spring in that regard. And then also because, I mean, your forte, your background is primarily as a pitcher. You were Vintage High School up there in Napa, up in the wine country area, had a great high school career, obviously a phenomenal college career at Miami. Let's go back to the Miami days because Miami has traditionally been one of the powers in college baseball. And in the College World Series that year, the year you guys won it all, you beat Florida State. I mean, how big of a deal, that in-state rivalry, two traditional powers. Take us back in time a little bit. Tell us what it was like for you to be on that championship team and beating Florida State in the title game.
Yeah, no, it was great experience. You know, I went to Miami, and I think that was the sixth year in a row we went to the College World Series. So we were kind of, you know, thought of ourselves as the Buffalo Bills of college baseball because, you know, we lost every year. And you know, that year we won it. But going into the World Series, that was the seventh time that we played Florida State that year. We played them a home series for three games and a road series for three games. And we had beaten them 5 out of 6 going into that championship game. So, you know, I think Stanford was the other team that they had beat in extra innings to go. And we were hoping we'd play Stanford. You know, you don't want to play a team for the seventh time, especially your biggest rival in the championship game. But, you know, to beat them made it all the better, you know, to get a chance to beat Florida State when you're at Miami, and especially in the national championship game, was, you know, probably as good as it gets. So it was a great experience. And I got a chance to throw the last pitch. So, you know, even better, you know, but it was fun. And you know, Coach Morris, he's in his last year at Miami this year. So I still talked to him. And actually, when we were at Pacific last year, we went to Florida State and played against Coach Martin. And he's great. And he's probably in his last few years here, too. But, you know, he definitely did not like me too much when I was playing there. I think he likes me better as a coach. So it was fun to get a chance to talk with him a little bit, too.
Well, you were a strikeout guy in college. I mean, you had, I think, your last year, like 110 strikeouts, a 14.8 as far as strikeouts to 9 innings pitched. What was it that made you such a strikeout guy? Because well, that's not the easiest thing to do.
No, I realized that after I started coaching. You know, I think, you know, to me, that was just kind of my mentality. I had a pretty good breaking ball and I had a pretty good feel for secondary stuff. So I was able to really attack hitters and it was to the fault sometimes. My walk numbers could be high as well. And now as a coach, I, you know, want to strangle some guys if they walk people, you know. So I definitely, you know, a little more mature with my coaching and understanding that not everybody can do it that way too. So I think I'm probably, you know, as much as the strikeout is great, realizing that not a lot of guys can probably do that. So, you know, we're a little bit more, you know, pitch to contact, pitch to weak contact, use your defense, where I was completely the opposite. I was like, no defense, strike, walk them or strike them out. And as a coach, that's a nightmare. I feel bad for some of the coaches that had to watch me pitch at times, but it obviously worked to my advantage, you know, a lot. You know, you don't have to worry about the defense out there, but I think you rarely have that guy that can really go out there and just strike out everybody. And as a reliever, I was able to do that at times, you know, but it is definitely more difficult. And I think teaching our guys, especially coming from high school and junior college, sometimes dominating and striking a lot of guys out at that level, it's not going to happen in the Pac-12, and getting them to understand how to pitch. And I had to transition from that in college into professional baseball. So it probably really helped me to kind of help, you know, these guys understand what it takes to not just strike guys out and just kind of caveman it out there. You got to learn how to pitch and get guys out. And, you know, I think it's really helped my coaching ability to kind of pitch a lot of different ways. I had to totally transition as a pitcher at the next level.
You had a chance to play professional baseball, as you mentioned, A's, Marlins, Dodgers, you know, briefly as well. What was it about your professional experience that you can impart upon these guys here at Cal that hopefully will enhance their opportunities maybe to get to the next level?
Yeah, no question. I think I use that a lot. I obviously was able to pitch through every level, the minor leagues and into the major leagues. I got a chance to see a lot of guys have success in a lot of different ways, you know. So there's, you know, finding a path for each one of these guys that will make them successful. I've seen a lot of different paths and a lot of different arm actions and arm slots and hitting, you know, just everything that's different, and guys can have success. So it's helped me kind of have a vision and help these guys. And then also just seeing the makeup and the mental aspect of the game at that level, what those guys go through, what their preparation is like to be successful, you know, what their mindset is, you know, their toughness factor, how they deal with adversity. You know, the guys at the major league level are unbelievably talented, you know, but I think the mindset is very similar. Those guys are tough competitors. They want to win. Their preparation is in an effort to be successful. And, you know, to, you know, instill that in our guys, you know, not everybody's going to be a major leaguer here, but we will have some really talented guys, you know, but even just maximizing their talent here and understanding what it takes to be successful there, I think is a huge advantage for me to instill in these guys. So we really just try to get better every day. We try to, you know, give them that mindset every day. And I think our guys have really responded well to it.
I was around the Northwest League for 26 years. And we got a chance to see the Ken Griffey's come through, and there's a guy, he was there for 3 weeks. Okay, you knew he was going. And then there were guys like Eric Davis came in from the LA area, who was a shortstop coming in, and he really struggled. They brought him back the next year. They put him in the outfielder. The guy ended up with a long time major league career, was an all-star and so forth. So for me, it was kind of fun to see the raw talent come in. And then eventually 3, 4, 5, maybe 6 years later, these guys playing in the major league. So I can understand where you're coming from a little bit in that regard. All right, let's talk about this year's squad, picked 5th in the preseason by conference coaches. It's a team coming off a year last year that hit the heck out of the baseball, struggled a little bit with the defensive end of it, struggled a little bit with the pitching as well. As you look at what you've got this year, and you've got some really talented players that are, you got two guys on the Golden Spike preseason award. Your reliever is on the Stopper of the Year award. You got an ace in Jared Horn. Well, what do you see for this team this year?
Yeah, you know, I think when you look at last year, you know, you're right. I mean, we had a really good year offensively, and I don't think there's any reason to believe that we shouldn't continue that. You know, we have some very offensive guys. I mean, led by Andrew Vaughn, who's, you know, a Team USA hitter, you know, definitely one of the best hitters in the conference and potentially in the country. And we have some surrounding guys that can do some damage as well. You know, so I think, you know, our team strength is going to continue to be that. You know, the pitching numbers were definitely not great, you know, and I think part of that has to do with the youth. You know, you had a lot of younger guys pitching last year, understanding the game. You know, I think we should improve in that area, and that'll really be the determining factor, you know, as if we can turn the corner pitching and defense, you know, just because in baseball in general, you know, you get a chance to pitch and play defense, you have a chance to win the game, and that'll be the determining factor. So it'll be exciting. You know, obviously, as a pitcher, I take a lot of pride in these guys. I put everything I have into it with these guys, and I am very confident that we will be better, and I think everybody in that locker room plans on being in a regional, and, you know, and that's the goal. So I think anything short of that would be a disappointment to this team and to me personally and our coaching staff. But, you know, we've worked very hard to improve some of those areas where we were lacking last year, and I hope it shows up as we get into games.
Yeah, we talked about, you know, Andrew Vaughn, obviously, he was a Pac-12 freshman of the year. He hit almost 350, which is amazing, at 12 home runs. A guy from my area, Santa Rosa. I actually live in Healdsburg, but he's not too far away. He had a tremendous high school career at Maria Cabrillo. Tanner Dodson, talk about him. Now, here's a two-way guy. Here's a guy that pitched a lot last year. And I want to say he might have been the opening day starter last year, and yet still hit about 300 as well. How much of this do we see in college baseball with guys that can do well at both of those areas?
You know, it's pretty rare. I mean, you know, I think, you know, I was able to recruit Tanner here as a recruiting guy, most of these guys on the team, Vaughn included. So you get a chance to see what they're doing in high school and kind of what you project that they might do. And he was one of the few guys that, you know, I did think could do both based on seeing him play outfield. He's unbelievably athletic. He's a switch hitter, you know, and on the mound, I saw him in high school, you know, in the mid 90s. You know, so you were more worried about if he was going to make it to campus, you know, escape the draft rather than even, you know, have these opportunities. But I think we're still in a position now where we don't know what he's best at. And I don't think pro scouts do either, which is great. He won the batting title in the Cape Cod League. Right. So we decided, you know, we're going to use him out of the bullpen. You need some of your better guys to be bullpen arms, and we're going to allow him to just go play center field every day. When you try to start him and then make him an outfielder and then maybe DH him, it gets mucked up really quickly when you try to figure out what's best and how he can do it and taking care of his body. So, you know, we have really tried to just give him a super easy game plan. Go play center field every day. Go hit every day, and we'll bring you out of the bullpen for an inning or two on the weekend and let you go pitch in some big innings for us. And, you know, I think that's the best chance for us to maximize his ability.
You have, potentially, depending on how you want to play it, you've got three starters basically back from last year. I mean, you have a Friday, a Saturday, and a Sunday that have pitched a lot of baseball here at Cal. That has to be, I would think, a tremendous advantage going into the season, that you have a base and you have a pretty good idea what to expect.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, we have Jared Horn on Friday, Joey Matulovich on Saturday, and Matt LaDresch on Sunday. Now, I will say, I mean, we've had some other guys pitch well in the fall that have not pitched well before. So I think it gives us some more depth to know that we can bring some guys in some situations that maybe they haven't had success in before, or maybe shorten the game a little bit with a little stronger bullpen, especially bringing Tanner to the bullpen. So I think it gives us as a coaching staff a little more confidence that we don't have to rely on our starters to just go out there and throw nine innings to win the game. I think if they can go out there and give us a solid outing, you know, I mean, you'd love for him to pitch into the seventh inning, but knowing that we do have enough depth now to maybe have a guy, hey, go five or six innings and we can shorten the game, it takes some pressure off those guys, which is good. But it does help that they have the experience doing it. And even though they haven't had a ton of success, they've been out there, they've been through the conference.
And you got a closer, you know, Eric Martinez, who is listed on the preseason stopper list, which is good. So you know what you have on the back end as well. He's closing in on the all-time Cal record for saves in a career, which is, and he should get that this year. We're going to say he's going to get seven more saves and get the record this year. So pretty solid in that regard. All right. You open up this weekend down in San Diego, then you come back home for four against Bakersfield. And then, I mean, it's a challenging non-conference. You go to Frisco. You've got Texas A&M there. You got Baylor there. Those teams are always good. And then you get the wonderful opportunity to open up conference play against Oregon State. In the Pac-12, Oregon State, Oregon, I mean, you just go down the list, it's challenging. But to open up, that's a huge series to get things started.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, I think it's a good schedule. I think there is some challenging games in there. And then to play Oregon State the first weekend, I think there's no question. Everybody knows they're picked coming first in the conference. They're a great team. They're well-coached. It's going to be a great challenge for us, you know, and a really good measuring stick. And to play them at home, I think, is great. So hopefully, you know, we're staying healthy and we're prepared going into that series. And it'll be, you know, it'll be a really, really solid schedule. Anytime you're in the Pac-12, it's every game is tough. But I think, you know, they proved last year, you know, that they're at a very high level right now. And that's where we want to try to get.
Unfortunately, no Stanford at home. It'd been nice to see David Esker, who was here for 17 years. He went back home, basically, to Stanford, where he played. So it's a little unfortunate that we don't get to see that. You've got to go over there for the three games over there. But, you know, when you get in the dugout and you walk and you exchange the lineups there, That'll be a little interesting, I would think.
It will be. You know, we do still stay in touch. And, you know, he hired me here. Mm-hmm. So, you know, obviously gave me an opportunity to be here. And we went through a lot together in those 4 years, kind of rebuilding the program back to go to a regional my last year here. So, you know, we went through a lot of things together, being here together, and now him moving on, we'll stay in touch. So it will be fun to play against him now. You know, you're right here. I think we'll be a little bit different, but even on the road, it'll be fun.
All right. Well, we appreciate you taking the time. Get out there and score some runs, throw a few shutouts, win a bunch of ball games, hopefully get to that regional, and good success in the first year.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
All right. Mike New, the baseball coach for the Bears. Pretty exciting times here for baseball, because it's a team that's got some veterans, some leadership, some hitters, some good pitching. So it ought to be a fun year for the Bears. All right. That wraps it up for this week's Bear in Mind. We appreciate everybody listening to us. A special thanks to our guests. Stan Morrison, of course, the former Pete Newell player back in 59, 60, and 61. We appreciate him stopping by, giving us his thoughts about the Pete Newell Lifetime Achievement Award he got last year. And it'll be awarded this year to Ned Averbuch in the game against Stanford on Sunday. And to Sharman Smith, speaking of Stanford, a former Stanford player, longtime assistant here with the Bears, as they get ready to face Stanford twice, not once, but twice this week. Well, we hope you have a great week, everybody, and we'll talk to you next week on Bear in Mind, the official podcast of Cal Athletics. Go Bears!
This has been Bear in Mind, the official podcast of Cal Athletics, with your host, Todd McKim. The preceding has been a Learfield IMG College presentation.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.